Last week was rough. In general, you might have heard that San Diego was hit with a lot of rain last week. And in fact, by the time my podcast came out on Spotify and other streaming services, I wound up getting caught up in the rain. And let's just say, and I'm going to be very concise, it was not good. My public service announcement for anyone who sees a flash flood warning, pay attention to it, because sometimes a flash flood warning may be nothing. Sometimes a flash flood warning could be something that is just, oh, there's a high chance of rain. But if you see the phrase flash flood warning loudly blaring out of your phone, your radio, or your TV, follow it. Just follow it. Just follow it, and better to be safe than sorry. And on that note, hi, I'm Joel Garcia. Welcome to the Pop Culture Shuffle. On today's show, I have a few things to talk about. First up, a long belated review of Disney's Wish. Then, I take a look at some more fanfiction, this time involving Bones and a certain animated film. And finally, we talk about the AFC and NFC championship games and see who's going to the Super Bowl. But first, let's talk Disney. Portions of the following recording were all done within a single night, with two major exceptions that will be noticeable by the bleeps. So recently I was writing up my next topic for today's show, and unfortunately, when I was looking at it, I realized that it was going on for a bit too long, so in the end, I've had to delay it. But I do have another topic I want to talk about, and it nicely aligns with something I just found out. Recently, the Disney animated feature Wish came out on digital, and it also didn't get nominated for Best Animated Feature, which is a shock since normally Disney easily gets at least one nomination for Best Animated Feature. Elemental got the nomination, but no other Disney film. And it's a pity because Wish was probably not the best way to wrap up a centennial celebration, especially considering it began with Strange World in 2022, and outside of a few positives, it pretty much was not that good. I struggle to say what was pretty good about Disney's centennial, since there were a few good things, such as the marbles and the Little Mermaid, but if you were to say, oh, in general, not that much. You had TV shows that were getting canceled in and around for dumb reasons, several underperforming films, executives who felt on and off like blaming the writers for a lot of problems, the strikes, and to quote the late Tim Russert, Florida, Florida, Florida. Now there was at least one major positive that most people tended to agree on. The Disney Centennial short, Once Upon a Studio. Now the reason I bring up that particular short is because it introduced the character before their film came out. One of the last visuals of that short was of the characters all singing When You Wish Upon a Star, and at one point, Snow White holds the hand of a new character named Asha. The reason for that is because, from what I heard, the short was originally supposed to premiere alongside Wish, the animated film that essentially served to culminate the studio's anniversary. Long story short, that didn't happen, and instead, from what I saw, it premiered on ABC first, and then eventually it came to Disney Plus, and more recently YouTube. And apparently there was some form of theatrical screening to get nominated for the Oscar, but it didn't get nominated. Now the reason I bring up the short is because I feel it's a great comparison to make with the movie Wish. The comparison I want to make? The right and wrong way to celebrate an anniversary. So let's talk about the film. In the movie Wish, there is a kingdom simply known as Roses, in which a king, simply known as King Magnifico, and his queen Amaya have established a kingdom where all your wishes will come true. And one day, a girl named Asha decides to see if she can fulfill a wish, mainly that of her grandfather who wants to be a singer. And when she goes to talk to King Magnifico, he is amazed by her skills and reveals something secretive. He has gathered all the wishes of the people of the village, but he hasn't fulfilled them all. In fact, while some got their wish true, he's kept others, and he refuses to give them back, because he'd rather let them keep on the hope of ever getting their wish fulfilled than just giving it back. Later on, Asha wishes she could fulfill her grandfather's wishes, only to then suddenly get a magical star from the sky. Literally. Who then proceeds to do a lot of magical stuff, including making her pet goat talk, and ultimately realize she can fulfill the wishes of her family and friends. Well, unless King Magnifico has something to say about it. Now, with a movie like Wish, there were a lot of things I remember people getting upset about when the trailer came out. To me, my biggest issue was that the main character looked way too much like a character from Encanto. Specifically, the character of Asha resembled Isabella Madrigal, the older sister in Encanto. Now, that might be because they both have the same hair color and expression, but that's what I noticed. And other people were complaining about the animation that was trying to be stylized, and to me, it somewhat looks like that. It doesn't look super stylized, it just looks like they wanted to have something similar to, say, Klaus or Spider-Verse, in which they want to do something that just doesn't look like, oh, it's CG animation. And it just felt like they were trying to make something that was a cross between 2D and 3D, which begs the question, why not just do 2D? I also have to admit that the music I've heard in the commercials before seeing the film did not exactly impress me, and after seeing the film, the music is just not that memorable. Encanto had We Don't Talk About Bruno, Frozen had Let It Go, this film had... I don't remember, that's how forgettable it is. The other problem I had with the film once I saw it were the references. The many, many references. Before I went to see the film, I recall seeing a tweet from someone saying that Wish was a secret prequel to every single Disney film. Something that I had to refute because, well, one, that sounds really stupid, and two, does not make any sense. Having seen the film, my point still stands, but at the same time, this film really loves to tell you that it's a Disney film. If you were to play a drinking game over how many Disney references are in this film, you would get alcohol poisoning within the first 10 minutes. It's one thing when, say, a rival studio makes a reference to Disney, and it might be seen like, oh yeah, take that, but it's another to see Disney constantly reference themselves. I'd say it was trying to be like a deconstruction of the Disney animated film, except there already exists a film like that, and it's called Enchanted. And it didn't try to, like, beat down any other film, as far as I can recall. It honestly got very annoying to watch, and I remember just groaning at the screen, just seeing all these references pop up. Some are subtle, some are blatant, like Asha's friends are just references to the Seven Dwarves. And then there was this dumber reference in the film where after the ghost starts talking, which by the way, that's how memorable he is, I don't even remember his name. He's just that forgettable. The song ends with a bear and a deer just talking to each other, and the bear says, "No problem, Bambi." And apparently that's supposed to be the bear from the Jungle Book and Bambi from Bambi? Now, normally in a film like this, I would try to say, oh, maybe there's something positive about it. Maybe there's something that makes up for all these references, and there isn't. Chris Pine plays the bad guy, and I will say this. I like the fact this film finally brought back the bad guy, because there was one thing that really bothered me about the past few Disney films, there was no villain. It was just like a personal crisis, and that was it. And it really makes for a lackluster story if your antagonist is nobody. Unfortunately, King Magnifico is not exactly a threat. And if anything, from what I saw online, the early storyboards and concepts would have had a dual villain because his wife would have also been evil. But because they didn't do anything with the wife, she's just there. It's like, hi, I'm the queen and I'm sorry and nothing else. She's just nothing else in the story. And personally, I don't think even making her the villain would have helped this film. It had too many issues that just prevent it from being a good film. Honestly, I can't recall anything that would salvage it. The story is really underwhelming. It's like a rough draft. To me, it felt like a film that had a first act, and then bam, we're the third act. It didn't feel like there was a second act. Or if there was a second act, it was like less than 10 minutes long. And it's unfortunate because this is a film that I really wanted to like. I'm not as mean-spirited as other people watching Disney films. I don't immediately see something from Disney and say, this is garbage. I like giving it the benefit of the doubt. I'm someone who grew up with Disney, who really enjoys their content, and happily continue to watch it this very day. And it's really disappointing when I see something from Disney that could have been great, but isn't. And especially with Wish, where a lot of it just felt rushed. The premise of Wish, personally, could have worked, but it needed more time. It needed a few more rewrites. It needed a few more characters to follow. Because we have Asha, and that's about it. Like, I don't remember any of the other characters. They weren't that memorable. Even King Magnifico himself is not that memorable of a character. If I were to compare him to other Disney villains, I'd probably say he was as memorable as, say, the bad guy from Home on the Range. It's also strangely a film that really annoyed me with the end credits. And that's a weird thing to complain about, the credits being terrible. How is that possible? Golden visuals of other Disney characters show up during the credits. It'll be one thing if it were like, oh, all the major protagonists from other Disney films, like Aladdin, Mickey. But no, you have Aladdin, and then for some reason, Yzma from The Emperor's New Groove. Like, literally, the most memorable thing about The Emperor's New Groove wasn't David Spade, it was Yzma. And then for some reason, when it came time to reference Big Hero 6, rather than say, get the main character from that film, Baymax, they got the bad guy, who I'm pretty sure nobody remembers his name. I had to Google that, by the way, and his name was Robert Callaghan, who is also known under the supervillain name Yokai. That's how fucking forgettable he is. I had to Google that. Look, in general, Wish is a disappointment. I would call it terrible, but I've seen worse Disney films. Like, it reminded me a lot of Strange World in a way, where that film had its own set of problems. It had an interesting multi-generational conflict between the father, his son, and, well, his father. But that film was so terrible, I remember apologizing to my brother. My brother loves the movie Treasure Planet, and I remember for years calling that film crap because I had a lot of problems with it. But after seeing Strange World, I just told him, Treasure Planet was actually pretty good. Sure, Martin Short is annoying as hell in that film, but I'll gladly watch Treasure Planet again than having to see either Strange World or Wish. So in a positive way, bad films make other bad films look better by comparison. Even The Black Cauldron looks pretty good by comparison. And if you've never seen The Black Cauldron, well, it's on Disney Plus. It's worth checking out. At least once. So overall, Wish wasn't that memorable. The plot feels like a rough draft. The songs aren't that memorable. The acting was there. And even the bad guy wasn't even that memorable. Like, literally, the only thing you'll probably remember about the bad guy was Captain Kirk's the bad guy, and that's it. Oh, and the funny talking animal. But you see, even that's not memorable enough. If the funny talking animal isn't memorable, you failed as a movie. So I went back and Googled, who was the funny talking animal in Wish? His name is Valentino, and he's voiced by Alan Tudyk. You know how hard it is to find a role in which Alan Tudyk can try to be funny and he's not? Because it wasn't! It just wasn't funny! It wasn't funny at all! It's just terrible! God, this movie sucked! Disney's Wish is now available to own on digital. Now it's time for another piece of fanfiction, and it's been one that I've been trying to do for the longest time. Bones. Now for those of you who don't remember, Bones was a TV show that ran on Fox for 12 seasons, and set around the adventures of Booth and Brennan. Booth, the FBI agent, and Dr. Tempest Brennan, who was in charge of the Jeffersonian. And through 12 seasons of middling results, they would investigate murders by finding decomposed bodies and finding out the mysteries of whodunit. It was a show that, when it began, was pretty good. But as time went on, it just started jumping the shark. It added so many stupid twists. And something that really bothered me was how every season ended on a really dumb cliffhanger. I could go on and on talking about the many problems Bones had. And I will admit, I hated the show for its final 3 seasons because I just wanted it to end. I recall being excited when, in the show's penultimate episode, something happens that causes their main setting to essentially blow up. Meaning that if they wanted to bring this show back for another season, they'd have to pay to build a new set. I will say this about the series finale though, at least it ended on a positive note. Well, except for Sweets being dead, but that was mostly because the guy who played Sweets went on to write a really crappy remake of National Lampoon's Vacation. When I decided to pick a piece of fanfiction I wanted to highlight for the show, I wanted to do a crossover fanfic that had Bones interact with something completely different, like I have done before with fanfics that were crossovers between Harry Potter and Bonanza, or Lupin the Third and Inspector Gadget. There was just one problem! Most of these crossovers were really bad! The first time I thought I found a good crossover, it was just a story that essentially transplanted the characters from Bones as Harry Potter characters. So it wasn't like, oh, Booth and Brennan meet Harry Potter and the gang. No, they are Harry Potter and the gang. One that came relatively close to being highlighted on this show was a crossover with the anime series Naruto. But it was disappointingly bad because it starts off with everybody from that show being dead except Naruto. I felt it would have been a retread of something I've already done before, a crossover fanfic about the Chronicles of Narnia and the Avengers, which only had one character from the former meeting the latter. It took a while, but I finally found a good story and one I really wanted to highlight. The story is titled The Mandible in the Sky by Stitch 54. It's a crossover between Bones and the DreamWorks animated film, How to Train Your Dragon. Now that film, of course, is about a boy named Hiccup meeting a Night Fury and, well, all the shenanigans that happen when you have a dragon. Now this story is technically a crossover between the film and show, but it's not a complete crossover. While it has the island of Burke from that film and a Night Fury, it does not have the characters of Hiccup and Astrid or any of their pals and family members in it. In his author notes, Stitch 54 specifies the timeline by saying that it is set thousands of years after the first How You Train Your Dragon and somewhere during Bones' 5th season, or to be more specific, the episode Witch in the Wardrobe. The synopsis for The Mandible in the Sky reads, a Night Fury has sat waiting on a cliff for 10 years, waiting for his partner to return. The villagers are running out of ideas. The last, if not crazy one, is to bring the partner back. Time to bring Bones back to Burke. This story was written in April of 2010, long before How to Train Your Dragon was a franchise. Only the first film had come out at that point. There wasn't even like a short, a holiday special, not even the TV shows or its 2 sequels. So it is kind of awkward to point that out because if you've seen the films, you know where the story winds up going when it comes to the status of dragons in the future. As for Bones, the episode acknowledged in the author's note, The Witch in the Wardrobe, notably had Jack and Angela, 2 supporting characters, get married. But their relationship has no bearing on the story. Now the portion I'm going to read from The Mandible in the Sky could best be summed up as a prologue, but it is placed within the chapter as a flashback. But I think it works well as a great opening start to the story. Especially because, for some reason, the story tends to jump between a first-person point of view of another character and then third-person narration. And this portion works out well to set up the story, especially as it has the character of Tempest Brennan, who from this point on I shall refer to as Bones because it gets really confusing, interacting with the world of How to Train Your Dragon, but in a very lighthearted note. With all of that said, here is a snippet from Chapter 1 of The Mandible in the Sky, The Lone Dragon. 10 years ago. The chief walked in through the door of the cabin in which the mystery woman was being kept. He examined the room before entering to find she was nowhere to be found. As he stepped in, he somehow tripped and rolled over to find the woman standing above him holding a ladle ready to strike. The chief was a large man, over 6 foot easily, and he couldn't see how she could have done this to him. She examined him, before extending her hand to help him rise. His long graying beard of brown flowed down as gravity took over, and his gray eyes looked over this stranger. She had been out for the past 2 days, after the Night Fury picked her up on the morning flight. They didn't know how long before that she was unconscious. To add to all of this, they had no idea who she was or where she came from.
"You must be the chief,"
she said with an American accent.
"Yes, Chief McCullough,"
he replied as he subconsciously reached behind him for the chair up against the wall.
"We don't know who you are or where you're from."
"Tempest Brennan. I live in America, Washington, D.C. at the present moment, and I was out studying the Viking culture for my forensic anthropology degree when I think my boat capsized,"
she said as her right hand rubbed her head.
"Can you please explain to me where exactly I am?"
"You're on buck, Miss Brennan, in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. A good half a day boat ride from anywhere."
She nodded to the new information. She didn't seem a bit bothered that she was in the middle of nowhere, or the fact that she had been traveling in the cold seas for an unknown amount of time, or the fact that the crew of her ship might be looking for her. She tensed up as there was scratching on the roof, and raised the ladle ready to strike.
"What is that?"
she asked, looking around the area above her.
"Ah, it's only Frido, wee lass. He won't bite ya, just to be curious as to whom you are. See, we don't get too many visitors here, and it is sort of a new experience for him."
Chief McCullough told her as he stood and headed to the door.
"And Frido would be a bird then," she said as he gestured for her to follow.
The chief laughed.
"Ah, Miss Brennan, you have a lot to learn," he told her.
She was hesitant about coming with him.
"He won't bite, and if you're afraid of the rest of us, he won't bite you either."
She followed him outside, after he handed her a pair of leather boots to wear. Outside, it was a lovely, calm summer's day. A cool breeze blew, making the sunshine pleasant and welcoming. As if the event had been dramatized, there was a gathering of about 30-odd people waiting in a semicircle outside the door. More stretched around the sides of the building. All of them were eager to get a glimpse of her, men, women, and children, all dressed in a similar way to her, woolen, weaved, knitted, and leather clothing. They all had smiles on their faces as she looked around, and the chief raised his arms for silence.
"People aboard, this is Tempest Brennan from Washington, D.C. in America. She is an honored guest until we can find a way to get it back to the mainland." He smiled at her. "So, let's give a good old bark welcome, eh?"
Everyone around them began to laugh and make their ways off to do something the chief had obviously told them in the subtext of that speech. He looked at her as she gazed around at the village on the clifftop. It had been there for over 1,000 years, and not even a war would make these settlers budge.
"Do you want to meet Alfredo now?"
he asked as he called over a small boy. This boy resembled this man greatly, so Tempest assumed that he was the chief's son. He could also be no more than 5 years old. He looked up at her, ginger red hair burning like fire in the sun, and blue eyes like her,
full of happiness of the youth. This is my son Bart. Fredo is his pet, McCullough said as he patted the boy on his shoulder. Bart, this is Miss Brennan, and she would like to meet Fredo.
The boy looked up and behind her. Temperance did not look as it seemed the boy was looking at her. He took two fingers to his mouth and whistled. There was a loud whoosh from somewhere behind her. Tempy turned to look, but there was nothing to explain the sound. She turned back to find two big, yellow, cat-like eyes staring back at her. Normally, in these circumstances, she would have defended herself with a good kick to whomever or whatever this was, but this time she stood still as the eyes examined her thoroughly. They jumped backwards to behind the man and the boy to reveal that the eyes belonged to a long, dark, purple-winged creature. Bart stroked whatever it was his head as it nudged the boy slightly. McCullough scratched what looked like the creature's ears before it flipped onto its back like a dog playing. Tempy just stared at the irrationality of what the hidden child within her brain was telling her this creature was. Being thrown out of that boat must have knocked her head hard. This is Fredo, Miss Brennan, the chief said as the creature flipped back over.
What? Is it?
She stammered out, on the verge of physically shaking with fear.
Hey, Miss Brennan, it's a dragon. The special thing about Bark, and the fact that he's so secluded, is that this is the only place on Earth where dragons can live without fear of being hunted. The chief said as he walked over to her, as she was glued to the spot. Do you want to come and say hello? She looked at him. Whatever she did next was going to happen without her thinking about it. She nodded her head, and McCullough led her over to the creature lying down on its side. He gestured for her to kneel down beside it, so she did. Bard, who had shuffled around to be next to her, took her hand and placed it on the dragon's skin. It was cold and scaly beneath, and she was reminded of her irrational fear of snakes. There was a roar from above her, and as she looked up, she saw that most of the village were high in the sky, flying all different types of dragons. Some weren't even mounted and were just enjoying the company.
This is amazing, she said as she began stroking Fredo.
Yes, but you have to promise to keep it a secret. You cannot tell anyone, McCullough told her as she looked at him. There is a phone in the village you can use to contact who you need to.
Now, the reason I wanted to highlight that particular portion was because it nicely sets up the story. Even if it is presented just after the characters are introduced and there's a setup for why Bones needs to go to Burke. Also, the story's title is a reference to how Bones episodes are titled, which was the X and the Y. As for Mandible, it is both a reference to, say, a jawbone, but also the name of Bones' dragon, which would be the said Night Fury. Having read through the story, I really do like where it takes the character of Bones, by taking her out of the usual Jeffersonian setting, or even just solving crimes, into this brand new world, where she's amazed by everything around her. Now, the big downside to the story is that because Bones isn't Burke, it doesn't know what to do with the other characters, so they're just doing a bunch of random stuff, like, let's look at this junk. Hey look, another case to solve. The story also follows an original character named Bart, who is supposed to be basically the modern day equivalent of Hiccup, who's an expert about this and knows how to deal with dragons. And he's an interesting character, though my only issue with the way the story is written is how he doesn't know where to stay with a first person perspective or a third person perspective. Because when he talks, it's always, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. But when the story tries to follow Bones or any of the other characters, it goes back to third person. So it goes, Bones is doing this, Bones is doing that. And it just keeps alternating without any setup for like, oh, we're switching perspectives now. Other than that, the story itself is pretty good because it mainly follows Bones training the dragons,
making friends with them, naming her dragon Mandible, and also introduced another character who was supposed to be a major character down the line. I say down the line because unfortunately, around 2011, the author discontinued the story. The plot synopsis even ends with the phrase, discontinued. It is sad the story was abruptly cancelled because it was setting up an interesting dynamic in which it would have a brand new villain, with Didi insinuating that Burke wasn't the only village with dragons. There would have been dragons all around the world, including a group of dragons from North America that were apparently evil. In the story's final chapter, which he announced a discontinuation, he simply explained that he lost interest and he had too many other commitments. He said that the only reason the story was still up was because his sister told him to keep it up online, something I will happily appreciate because it's a really good story. He also left some notes on what would have been the story had he continued it. They included, but were not limited to, Bones going back to Washington, her dragon Mandible following her, the Jeffersonian getting attacked by the bad guys, and then, at some point, all of the characters from Bones, including Booth, getting dragons of their own. And I really did like how the story would have ended, and he says, and I quote, "It then ends with Brennan and Mandible flying off into the sunset, and Booth then jumping on his dragon, and follows her back to DC," unquote. And the image of seeing an FBI agent like Booth flying a dragon to me is just hilarious. It's just one of those visuals you just don't expect to see. It'll be like, say, Batman riding a pony, or Charles Barkley playing basketball with Godzilla. And if you don't believe that one, look it up. It really happened. Charles Barkley and Godzilla. So overall, this is a fun story, and while it does end on an abrupt note, it is at least a good read, and it's something that I would say is worth checking out. It has 8 full chapters, and while the 9th chapter simply wraps up the story abruptly, it's still a good read, and I highly recommend it. The Mandible in the Sky by Stitch 54 is available to read on fanfiction.net. Finally, let's talk the NFL, and I just saw the end of the NFC Championship game, but first let's talk about the AFC Championship game. Now, this was a game I thought would be competitive, because you had the Ravens with all the hype, and then the Chiefs, and the Chiefs were lucky to get out of Buffalo, and one would think that maybe, oh, it's gonna be neck and neck, they're gonna be close and competitive and tight, and it wasn't! Somehow! The Ravens were just not able to win that game. It was a game in which, yeah, the defense did their best, but if you were to look at the final score, you would have thought, wow, this was a very close game. It wasn't. Literally, the Ravens only scored twice. In the first quarter, they scored a touchdown, and then in the fourth quarter, they scored 3 points. It wasn't a back-and-forth affair. The game was basically over by halftime. It was that bad. And there were several moments in which the Ravens could have scored a touchdown, but no, touchback. They were getting intercepted in the end zones, which is incredibly bad. I honestly don't know what else to say about that game, since otherwise the only thing I could bring up was that Taylor Swift was there. And yeah, at the end of the game, she went down on the field, kissed Travis Kelce, and our new lingering mystery is if she'll make it to the Super Bowl. Now I say it's a mystery because in a few weeks, she's about to start the international leg of her Eras Tour in Japan. And right now, there is the lingering possibility that, well, Taylor might not make it back to Las Vegas in time. We'll see what happens there, if Taylor will make it to the game. But otherwise, let's get to the NFC Championship game. I expected to be close. It didn't start out that way, obviously, but it was close in the end. For the longest time, it looked like the Lions were going to get this game in the bag and go to their first ever Super Bowl. And then the 49ers made a comeback, one that,
was actually pretty good, and, well, in the end, they deserve to go to the Super Bowl. Maybe someday the Lions will make it to the Super Bowl, because it's just really sad being on that really small list of teams that have never been to a Super Bowl. Even the Chargers were there once, and lost, but still, at least they made it to a Super Bowl. Maybe one of these days we'll see the Lions, Jaguars, Texans, or Browns make it to their first Super Bowl. Personally, I would love to see one of the four teams make it there. And the only way, of course, that could happen would be if it's the Lions versus one of the other three teams who are all in the AFC. Still, the 49ers did play a good game, and Brock Purdy did prove to everyone that he was more than just Mr. Irrelevant. After seeing what happened last year, I'm impressed. I'm amazed he actually did it. Now, as some of you may have noticed, this will be a rematch for the 49ers and Chiefs. The last time these two teams faced each other was 4 years ago in Super Bowl 44. As a reminder, that game was won by the Chiefs 31-20, essentially igniting their dynasty. Now here the mystery will be is if the Chiefs can keep going and actually win back-to-back Super Bowls, something that nobody has done since the Patriots in the early 2000s, or if the 49ers can finally get their revenge. I'll talk about that next week since, of course, the Super Bowl is for another 2 weeks, and next week we have the Pro Bowl games. Oh, and as for the Pro Bowl games, I've already made it clear my thoughts on that, and after having seen how the Pro Bowl games are being presented, I still don't care for them. It's just that the Pro Bowl game, now that you don't have them play an actual football game and just have a bunch of mini-games and flag football, it basically turned a game that was relatively interesting to something that's now much more boring. Because rather than see, oh, your favorites playing against each other, it's all your favorites who didn't make it to the Super Bowl play mini-games. I mean, at that point, why not just put a Madden simulation up? Put someone playing Madden, like, have someone from the AFC and the NFC just play Madden. I mean, that would at least be much more exciting to watch. I mean, I feel like the only reason it's still going is because ESPN needs 3 hours to fill on a Sunday afternoon. Regardless, I'm still not gonna watch the Pro Bowl games, mostly because there's something much more interesting to watch next Sunday. That would be NASCAR's Clash at the Coliseum. Something which I'm very excited to see because, well, as a NASCAR fan, I've always loved seeing that race, and for all I know, this could be the last one, so that's what I'll be doing next Sunday. If you still want to watch the Pro Bowl, that game will be airing on ESPN, ABC, Disney XD, and ESPN+. But if you want to watch something that's much more interesting and exciting, NASCAR's Clash of the Coliseum will take place next Sunday night on Fox. That is all the time we have for today's show. If you would like to know when the next episode comes out, remember to follow or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite stream provider. You can also follow me on Instagram, Threads, and Twitter/X at MrJoelGarcia9 and at MrJoelGarcia on TikTok. Until next time, thank you for listening.